How many people here use the Federal Excess Personal Property Program? Okay, so most of you do. And I know Bill's given a presentation on this in times past, but utilizing this system, especially in this time of tight budgets and everything, is something that we've found rewarding and saves money for other purposes, other research for us. I'd like to recognize my other authors in this, and Bruce Burdick is the superintendent of our farm up in Hunley Whaley in north central Missouri. Barry Barnes is actually Tim Reinbott's, one of his foremen, works with us on that. And then we, Dale Treese was our mechanic. He's really been the major player in our Federal Excess Personal Property Program for many years, but recently retired. So most of you probably understand how the program works. Land grant colleges, we operate under the jurisdiction of the USDA, so we're really a function of their work. It's pretty easy to transfer property between USDA ARS projects into the college ag or the land grant college, as it is for the NRCS equipment. But we do operate in that manner, and so as a result, Lana Podolsky out of Washington, D.C. is the person that manages that program. She reports to Cheryl Brumfield, who has a wider responsibility for the USDA property. The property ownership is something that you'll never own. It's always the title remains vested with the U.S. government, and so you will not get a title to a lot of these vehicles and things that normally you would get a title to. Accountable property officers are appointed at all levels, and I'm the accountable property officer as appointed by our dean for years ago, and you'll see that with each group that's participating in that. At the same time, the donees, or the military bases, or the NRCS divisions, will have their own accountable property officers, and these are the people that tend to be screening points through this where they make sure the system operates. The screening used to be that you go to a military base, you'd pick up an item, or you'd see an item, you'd tag it, and you'd come back a few weeks later, pick it up, and screen some more items. Well, that's after 9/11, it's hard to get on military bases unless you've got a real role there. As a result, most of the screening is done online. The beauty of it is that you can do that any place in the world, frankly, as far as the screening. The tough part is it's kind of like gambling at times because you're never exactly sure what you're going to get. You don't see it in hand. Screeners can be multiple, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. Each transaction or each item of equipment is assigned an individual identifying number, so it's easy to track that way. And for the activity that goes on for a month, you get a report that lets you know what you've done, and it asks you for vehicle identification numbers, serial numbers, things like that. You get an inventory each year from the federal government. Lana Podolsky's office will send that to you. But every other year, you're required to either touch or touch the person that touched the piece of property so that you know that you've got it. And finally, if the equipment is excess, whether the project has run its course or whether it's thrown a rod through the block, you just declare it excess and return it to the government through the screening process. How do we work? Again, I'm the central accountable property officer. But we have five screeners that we've opened it up to across the state. Two of these screeners do about 95% of the property. I think they both have sleep apnea problems or something like that. Bruce wakes up at 4:30 every morning, and I think Barry must still be awake at that hour of the day and night. But that kind of gives them the edge because the screening cycle rolls over about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And so they're able to get things, and they're very savvy with the ability to see what's coming up next and look at that. They're always carrying shopping lists, whether it's a staff member or whether it's project leader looking for a pickup or, you know, can you find me a microscope that we could use, or we're looking for a soil probe. So they're always looking for items that are coming up. The acquisition trends, we used to acquire a lot of property from the military, but with the Gulf Wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, the practice now is nation building. So this equipment is being left on site in these countries instead of being brought back. And obviously the federal government is also short on a lot of that military equipment anyway. So that's kind of been reduced. We do still get quite a bit of equipment through the military. But it's increased from other sources, things that we never thought of before. VA cemeteries have mores and backhoes. VA hospitals have a lot of times emergency generators that they're replacing. NRCS has been a wealth of information and a resource for us as far as picking up pickups for projects that are 97 and later model trucks. And so that's always good to be looking at other sources, the Corps of Engineers, EPA, whomever, NASA is also a good one. And then we look for specific needs. Tractors and trucks are always the traditional things that we're looking for, but frankly, we saved quite a bit of money finding tires on site that we could pick up instead of having to buy. Our shop supplies will save us money doing that also. It's important to maintain, well, you're required to maintain an inventory. The database, I guess one of the best databases I ever saw was Lee Morrison from Clemson, and his database was just a step above a Big Chief tablet, but it was very accurate and, you know, very good. So you can do it in a variety of ways. I think a pictorial inventory is very important, and I used to take pickups of the front and the rear of pickups or vehicles or something like that. Unless you've got a picture of that serial number or VIN number, you really don't have much of an identifier on that. And so the other important component of that is inventory reduction. As you go through the year, one of the bad names that this program gets is the inventory reduction or getting rid of the junk, quote unquote, as we say. You can acquire a piece of item maybe in as short as a week, but it's going to take you probably 6 weeks or longer to get rid of something. So that's always been a challenge. Wanted to go over maybe the top 10 items that top 10 classes of items that we value in the Missouri Ag Experiment Station, and certainly pickups with the stimulus money that went to NRCS. We acquired a whole series, probably 20 or 30 pickups, and these are Dodges, Fords, and Chevys that are anywhere from S10s and Dakotas to four-wheel drive. Well, we had F450s and even F550s that we acquired through that. So if it wasn't for that, I don't know, Tim, we might be on bicycles now. I don't know. But we also, as we went from two-row equipment to four-row equipment, our gooseneck trailers, we kept losing tires and rims off of those things. So now we've gone to looking at truck tractors, Macs, Fords, and Volvos, and have screened those and find the trailers to go along with those. So I really feel like we've improved the safety of our personnel while doing that. And backhoes, I remember a conversation in one of these meetings where people were talking about what's their favorite tool, and it was the guys from Dakotas, I think, that said a backhoe was. If you've ever buried a water line 8 feet deep, you know why. Tractors have always been a popular item. It's been kind of slow getting tractors in the process, but right now I know we're looking at a 5200 near Chicago and a 2355 John Deere in Illinois, or I guess Jefferson Barracks at St. Louis. So they are possible. The one in the lower right is probably one of the better looking tractors, I'll admit, that, you know, that we've ever acquired. And some, you know, sometimes you have to look at the screening process. But certainly we continue to look for those, and it's an important part. Loaders are important, especially in our animal science division where they're handling manure or our feed stuffs. And the trencher in the lower left down there just completed about 12,000 feet of water line for a new watering system for animal science in one of our pasture-based operations. We've been trying to get generators for all of our farming centers as backup emergency generators. So we've been able to pick those up at different places. Corps of Engineers Dam had several of those. Hospital had some. We send those off, $5,000, admittedly, to update those, update the controls on those. But they've been very serviceable for us. The forklifts, the one in the upper left, goes from there all the way down to the little hand pallet jacks that you have. So it varies on what you can get there, but certainly these have been valued. And then the truck in the lower left-hand corner was an auto car that we picked up in Phoenix that we later put a manure spreader bed on and has been extremely valuable to us as far as maintaining compliance and soil fertility on our farms with dairy and beef operations. The other I just kind of group in as specialty items. So it might be tires, it might be man lifts, like in the lower right-hand corner is a man lift. We've got another one that goes 105 feet in the air that we've used to do some of our antennas and wireless connections. ATVs, Tim's man Barry has been very good at picking up ATVs, three or four, admittedly not a whole group of those. Trucks, the Mustang loader that you see, and skid loader are some of the other items. So the program costs, there are program costs, and one is the time or the labor to screen, but frankly, I think a lot of our guys look at this almost as a sport, see what's out there. Secondly is the freight. Whether you go to get it yourself or whether you hire a company, we're finding it's about as cheap to hire somebody to do that is important, and it's a cost. Inventory management does take time, and inventory reduction takes time. So there are benefits. You're working with equipment that you wouldn't have otherwise. You have the ability to adapt equipment. Usually you can write a request to change a piece of equipment or what have you and adapt it to a research project. You use it as long as it's functional. When you're done, turn it back in. And it also hopefully saves funding for other research. I'll end with this. We do have an annual meeting of the Users and Screeners Association, Federal Access Personal Property. This coming year, it's going to be in Lexington, Kentucky in April. And at that time, we always include presentations by GSA for their, how the program is administered. But at the same time, we also have sharing sessions with screeners about what's working for them and what's not working for them. And then we'll include a tour of the University of Kentucky facilities and end with a banquet at their conference center. So, Ray, I'll turn it back to you.
Well, if you guys have any quick questions for John, we've got a few minutes or a couple minutes.
Yes, Bill?
If you get a road vehicle from the federal government, one of these other agencies.
Yes.
You said the title remains with them. Does the licensing also remain with them?
We're able to. The question was, if you get a federal vehicle that requires a license, how do you license it? We use our screening form, or the SF-122 form, that gives approvals to acquire that. And somehow, I really don't know the rest of the process, but the university then licenses it as a university vehicle through that. We require insurance on all of our other vehicles, but there's no reason to insure these, since if it is wrecked, we don't get the money. It goes back to the federal government.
You still have liability on them.
You would have liability on it, yes.
So they can
renew
them?
Excuse me?
If the university puts it on their property, at least with us, they insure anything we have on there that has a tag.
For liability. The question was, will the university allow us to do that? And in our case, the University of Missouri, we'll have liability insurance on it because that goes along with that license plate, but we won't have comprehensive insurance on it. So, yes?
You mentioned comes out like 10 or 11 o'clock, you said, but early in the morning, too?
Well, The people on the East Coast have an advantage because I think at 11 o'clock at night, all the screening from the day before, the input, the property that's input, the question was, when is the timing switch and the best time to hunt, I guess, is the question. And the input items, as I recall, roll over about 10 or 11 o'clock at night and come up for screening, open screening the next day. Probably Eastern, but you're talking about someone who's time impaired. Yes. So if you are NRCS and you are putting a truck up, declaring it excess, it would be processed through the USDA office in Washington, D.C., and then it would come up for screening at probably 11 o'clock, just a batch run of everything they've got that's been entered.